Blog Talk Radio.
Live on Blog Talk Radio. Candid Frank Live, the National Lacrosse League edition, with Aaron William Freeland, Gary Grube, sometimes Jared Harris, and Frank Stanishi. Tonight we call live on the air. We call Gary Grube live on the air. That's right.
Hello.
There he is. Hi, Gary. It's Frank.
What's going on, Frank?
I don't know. What do you want to do? I'm just in here, you know, nothing to do, just thinking about lacrosse and the rock split, and I'm sure that didn't make you totally happy.
No, but it wasn't worst-case scenario.
Right. Oh,
and we can always talk about today's move, yeah?
Yeah. So let's talk about it.
Oh, Stephen Horb.
Oh, don't worry, that's just Aaron. There, he's gone. Oh, no, he isn't. He's back. Wait, well, let's get Aaron.
Hey-o.
There you go.
Hey.
You didn't answer the first time, dude.
I didn't hear it the first time.
Well, I didn't leave you a voicemail, unless Gary did. Well, Gary might have. You know.
Nope.
Okay, so are we going to talk about the big news or what?
Oh, yeah. I should.
Well, why
let's let everybody in on it. Stephen Hoare is no longer a Toronto Rock. And the big trade with Vancouver.
Yes, welcome the guy who beat the snot out of Mike Lum.
In a big, big way. We can't beat him. Have him join us.
So tell us the particulars, starting with who he sent and why do you think he was sent?
Well, we only sent two draft choices for him, but we had to make room on the roster since we're only carry 18 and Stephen Hoare was cut.
So we trade. We got Bill Hostrazer in return. Now, Bill Hostrazer in the last game against the Celtics was their in-home player. That means that he's the player that's designated to serve any bench minors. He didn't have that bad of a game, to be honest.
No, he didn't.
So can't really complain about that. When you look at the final tally for Mr. Hostrazer, he had 4 loose balls and 5 penalty minutes for that little scuffle with Mike. But yeah, no, he played a good game. He wasn't, you know,
would it be
overly
fair to
obvious.
Say that? Would it be fair to say they brought him in for his physicality?
I believe so. Yes,
I think so. Yeah, as well as he's 23 years old, so we just got a whole lot younger again on defense
and tougher.
Yeah, which also leads me to the next question: is who's going to be taking our faceoffs now? Since I believe. Stephen Hoare did all but about 12 this year so far.
Yeah, well, I mean,
I guess it
was only
Sandy Chapman.
35%.
Yeah, so. Yeah, it was pretty much a, you know, we shouldn't even put somebody in the faceoff circle, really. So I think Sandy Chapman will probably be the guy taking faceoffs for a little while anyways.
Well, we'll see how that goes.
So that's is that the only move of note this week in the NLL?
Well, if you look, actually, Vancouver's made a whole lot of different moves. Buffalo, I know, placed Mitch Wild on the active roster from the player from the practice player list. Vancouver released Sean Lundstrom and signed him to the released Sean Lundstrom from the active and put him on the practice player list. They put Chris Wardle on the active. They put Brent Bucktooth on the active roster. They released Geitch. So there's another
That's a surprise, isn't it?
Yeah. I was a little surprised by that. They signed McBride. They put Kyle Sorensen back on the active roster. And they put Justin Pikul back up on the active roster. So there is that. But, yeah, no, it was a bit of a shock. There's been a wide variety of reactions, shall we say, on Facebook to the news of The Rock acquiring Hostrazer.
Yeah, both ways.
Yeah, some classy, some decidedly not.
Yeah, some really not. But you know, there's pylons everywhere.
Well, now, yeah, I guess you know when it comes to defending, there is an art to it, I guess.
Oh, most definitely.
And sometimes art is let's just say defined by interpretation. Right?
Well, they brought up a good point, actually. I think it was on Saturday night they brought up a pretty good point of some of the offensive players who were former defensemen, so you get the double bonus and you get a really good transitional player.
Okay.
So there's that always, you know, to have a good defender who can be an offensive player is a real, real steal.
One of the players like that springs to mind would be Daryl Gibson. Don't know if anybody remembers him, but he had 2 goals in the Toronto Rocks championship game against the Albany Attack in 2003. So it's a player like that can give you the offensive spark that you need occasionally is a good thing.
Yeah, the one that comes to mind on the Rock right now is Jesse Gamble.
Oh, most definitely.
Who can give you that kind of spark, and he had 2 goals on Friday as well.
Okay, we'll talk about each game as we get to those. But in other news that doesn't have anything to do with statistics or a review of the week, what about Philadelphia, the Wings, are honoring Jake Berge with retiring his number 66, sending it into the rafters. This guy's the second leading scorer in Philadelphia Wings history. Great player. What do you think of this and this move, and what can you tell us about this guy and what made him so special?
Jake Berge was one of those guys that never quit. Didn't matter what the score was, didn't matter how badly he might have been outclassed, he never stopped working. He's a great guy off the floor, too. I'm sure a lot of Philly fans remember him very, very fondly. He was one of those guys that got along with everybody. Great chemistry on the team, great set of hands, and like I said, just never quit.
Yeah, he played 10 years with the NHL's Wings in Philadelphia. As mm-hmm. I said, he finished second in scoring all time, 256 career goals, 557 points. And he also ranked second with 301 assists on the team all time as well. So, you know, he's been a player for that team since 1998, 10-year career. It appears, I guess he's played every year. He only played for Philadelphia, I think.
Yeah, he was one of those.
Started and finished with them, yep.
It was sad to see him go when he finally decided to hang him up, but he was one of those Rock killers.
Well, the Wings president and owner, Michael French, made it very clear he holds Jake in high esteem and feels that the 2 last championships they won would not have happened without Mr. Berge's number 66 on the floor making its contribution.
That's a totally excellent assessment because he was just phenomenal to watch. And I think it's a class move on the organization. And they've been doing a lot of things right lately, so this is another one in that step.
Now, just as I mentioned, for those of you that are unaware or aware, Colorado Mammoth Adam Jones will be on National Lacrosse League Live. So for those of you that know how to hook up to that, it's real simple. You just go on to NLL.com and the live link, and you'll be able to hear the interview. So that should be a lot of fun. Another interesting player, right?
Yeah, and he's got a scoring touch, even though he was held to only a few goals on the weekend, but they still found a way to win.
So, on a mention of note, Edmonton is still undefeated, winning 8-7 in overtime over Rochester. Now, that was a titanic defensive struggle. Edmonton's, along with Buffalo, 2 of the biggest surprises this year.
Yeah, that was a little more poetry in motion in the Edmonton-Rochester game than the Toronto-Buffalo game.
That's a bit of an understatement.
Yeah. yeah, I've seen a lot of things, and I'd seen some things there that even surprised me in that game. So
I know. I was absolutely ecstatic that they managed to continue winning. I'm really hoping they actually managed to go 6-0 because that would make my weekend.
There
that
you go.
Weekend.
All right, let's take not really a break. My fun little thing, my contribution to NLL history, and we'll be back in a minute and 13, and we'll start talking about the teams in the National Lacrosse League. The National Lacrosse League, NLL, is North America's professional indoor lacrosse league, featuring the best players in the world competing for the sport's most coveted prize, the Champions Cup. Founded in 1986, the NLL ranks third in average attendance for professional indoor sports worldwide, behind only the National Hockey League and the NBA. The 2014 NLL regular season, which marks the league's 28th year, opens on Saturday, December 28th. The league is comprised of 9 franchises across the U.S. and Canada. We have the Buffalo Bandits, the Calgary Roughnecks, the Colorado Mammoth, the Edmonton Rush, the Minnesota Swarm, the Philadelphia Wings, the Rochester Nighthawks, the Toronto Rock, and of course, the Vancouver. That's my way of poking fun at something. So there you go. Those are the 9 teams. And we review every week the games that took place. The boys do their homework. I can, and then in case the homework wasn't done, you can hear Aaron's keyboard going. And he gets up to speed. Now, every week I need help. And usually figuring out what week it is and which ones we're reviewing. So this week, I'm going to go for broke here. Friday the 31st?
Yep.
All right. Hey.
Come on. There you go. One in a row.
I can't believe it. I got it right. There you go. Okay. The Vancouver Stealth lost to the Toronto Rock at the Air Canada Centre 17-12. It seems Toronto came out, and they knew they needed a victory, a great start on their weekend. Right, gentlemen?
It was a great game, but it wasn't that great of a start, but they certainly picked it up. They did the opposite of what they've been doing for the last few games. They started slow and finished really, really strong.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed that Vancouver actually tried to take the crowd out early, jumping out to the lead that they did. You know, knocking us down to 6-3 after the first quarter. Kind of silenced everybody, but I'm glad that they pulled their heads out of their butts in time to at least come out of the second quarter with a tie.
I figured it was a win at 7-7 when we got it at halftime.
No, to not be losing at that point was definitely a good thing. So, you know, it showed that the Rock, for the first time in 3 games, the Rock actually scored some goals in the second quarter. They actually equaled their total of the previous 3 games by scoring 4 in the second. Skip ahead. Sorry, go ahead, Frank.
No. Go ahead.
I was going to say, skipping ahead to the third quarter, the Rock finally decided, I think, to put the hammer down a little bit. They opened up to an 11-9 lead at that point, and then from there it was just foot on the gas and coast all the way home. They actually reversed the score from the first period.
Yeah, and they had a bunch of grit, and they had a whole lot of feist with them, so they weren't going to let that thing slip away.
No. And I, you know what? I'm really glad they didn't. I'm not 100% sure I'd say it was a character win, but at least I'll say it was a win where they did everything right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree.
With the exception of Mike trying to fight that guy. Mike, if you're listening, never fight again. He'll have something to say to me at the bar after the next game, I guarantee
you. He probably is, and not very happy with you guys right now. He doesn't need to be reminded.
I think it was bad timing, bad shot selection in general. It just didn't work out in his favor, that's all.
No, but at least it was over quick.
This is true. It wasn't painful. Like watching the Leafs.
Oh, come on.
Well, that's just plain painful, eh?
All right. Let's stick to lacrosse.
Couldn't resist.
It's okay. I'm not going to bite. All right, so now we turn the calendar to a new month, February 1st. That would be the past Saturday. At the First Niagara Center, Buffalo continues to win, and they defeated the same Toronto Rock 12-10. Is this going to be the way it's going to be throughout the season? Buffalo seems to be for real.
Buffalo's got a chip the size of Tonawanda on their shoulder when it comes to Toronto, so I'm not really surprised by this, to be honest. I don't know. I mean, the fact that we were tied going into the fourth quarter, that was a good indication. But then, you know, when they went on a 3-0 run to put themselves up 12-9, that was pretty much it. They can play a shutdown defense, and they're buying into Troy's systems. So,
and again, Cosmo had a game of games.
This is true.
He was on the money most of the night. Like, I don't know what he's been doing differently this year than the last couple of years, but he seemed to have found his way of a few years back.
Now, John Granger mentioned to me that a goaltender for Buffalo, and it might be Cosmo, his neighbor is his uncle or something.
Well, I know Cos used to live in Mississauga, actually right up by Square One, but then he moved around a bit, and I kind of lost track of it. So...
Just saying.
I haven't seen Cos play this good since he was playing for Boston, and that's going back at least 4 years ago now.
Yeah.
Goodness, it is. Yep. Yeah. So you know, I mean, Buffalo's got it all. They've got great coaching. Bad news for the Rock. Really good goaltending, and a team that's playing and dedicated to a system, and they don't let any games get away from them. And I think that's the biggest character thing that they've got going on for them, is that they always are in the game. Even when they lost, they lost close. So,
well, they have a couple of things going for them now, which were in-house things. For one, Troy's woken the dead and has Steve Priolo being an offensive defenseman. But they've moved Mark Stainhouse away from transition and put him to where he should be on offense, because he's one of the most dangerous guys I've ever seen. And I thought Kilgore wasted him putting in transition. And then, of course, you put him with Tavares, and you have Benesch out there now. You know, you have a really, really potent offense, too, and they can keep up with anybody in the league.
So that's the thing. I mean, John Tavares can shoot the lights out with his eyes closed and one hand behind his back. You put him together with Stainhouse, who's got really soft hands around the net, and then you put in a genuine feeder like Benesch, and this is a dynamic punch up front. I don't care who the other two guys are that are on the floor with them. You've got those three guys on. You've got a shot at least a goal a shift. So,
and that's hard to keep up with.
Very. I mean, I think one of the issues that Stainhouse might have had is that being a transition player, he would be too gassed by the time he got down the floor. But...
And more times than not, he should be getting off the floor to let the offense on, so you're wasting all that offensive talent.
Yeah, exactly.
But you also have two no slouches in Dane Smith and Sean Williams, yeah?
Know,
so,
well,
you know, you have scoring all over the place.
One thing I actually wanted to mention, Sean Williams' daughter right now is actually fighting lymphoma. So Buffalo actually has a bit of a fundraising drive going on. Anybody that would be able to kick in money for that sort of thing or check it out at the Bandit's website, it would be greatly appreciated. I know Sean's a great guy. Unfortunately, I've never met his daughter, but apparently from all accounts, it's beatable for her. So it's something I'd like to get more people aware of, at least.
Yeah, and the Buffalo Bandits, it's just buffalobandits.com, I think, isn't it?
Actually, I believe it's just bandits.com.
I believe it's bandits.com.
Oh, bandits.com? And all you really have to do is go to NLL.com, and then you'll get the links to all the teams. So that's all you have to remember, NLL.com. That's NationalLacrosseLeague.com. Check out what you can do to help. You know, this program is a lot about being a fan and also, you know, being community conscious. So, you know, the boys are The players that play in lacrosse, and I don't mean to do this like a commercial or anything, but they are not separated from the fans. They,
sorry, Frank,
you know,
sorry,
the
I better get
over.
Correction in now, otherwise I'll never be forgiven.
Go ahead.
It's actually Sean's son, Tucker. I apologize for that. He's actually currently got stage 3 Burkitt's lymphoma, which is non-Hodgkin's.
Right.
So it's the fastest growing human tumor, and if it's not caught early, it can be fatal. The week before, that was when Tucker was diagnosed.
Okay, so...
That, Frank, so I just wanted to get that correction out there before...
No, that's fine, that's fine. You're trying to do something good, and sometimes in our haste to do something good, we, too hasteful. What can we say? One thing you're not, and that is cold-blooded. So obviously you're a very considerate person, and that's a welcome trait on this program. Thanks, Aaron, for that piece of information. So NLL.com, go to the Bandits, and I'm sure there'll be some info there on what you can do and learn more about a disease that's beatable. And, you know, one of the family of the NLL is in that battle, and we can see what we can do to help, and go to NLL.com again. Buffalo Bandits. All right, that takes us to Wells Fargo Center on that same Saturday, February 1st, and the Stealth were visiting the Philadelphia Wings. The Stealth have done a great job of playing well. Unfortunately, this weekend didn't work out too well for them because they lost to Philadelphia 15-9. So they lost 2 days in a row, once to the Rock, and of course to Philadelphia 15-9. Philadelphia is a median team. They're not, you know, they're not destroying the league, but they're not falling far behind. They're in the middle of the pack, and actually, they beat a pretty good team in Vancouver, didn't they?
They beat them fairly soundly at that.
Well, now that the Vancouver's have now fallen to 2-5 with their weekend this past, so that actually puts them firmly in the bottom behind Colorado now. So. We've seen a bit of a reversal of fortune there because just last week they were ranked a little bit higher. It was an interesting game. I'll give it that much. Kyle Buchanan did his thing and played the role of giant killer, came out with a monster game, 4 goals, 3 assists. It was good to see that. But all in all, it was, despite the score, it was actually kind of an entertaining game. I really enjoyed watching it. And it was a very clean game, too. I think we're looking at a total of about 18 minutes in penalties between the Stealth and the Wings.
Yeah, definitely. They played a very, very smooth game. But, say, Philadelphia, they're there. They just seem to be clicking with one another. And it's going to be interesting again this weekend when they come up to Toronto, how Toronto's going to react to this.
Well, it'll also be good to see my Philadelphia friends again, too.
Yes. Oh, Aaron, can I ask you a question? Justin Warner, did he want to be on the program again today?
I haven't heard from Justin in this past week. I've been a little bit distracted, unfortunately, but I can find out.
No. Yeah, find out if he wants to be on again. I feel bad that we didn't discuss it before the show, and I don't want him to feel like, he's not welcome, because he is, as is everyone who's interested. If you are or know of somebody that is, an LL fan, has the gift of gab, let them know that we're always willing to have as many people on giving their opinion of the game as possible. We're not restricted to any team, any fan of any team. All the teams are equally wanted on this program. If you're getting the impression that there's a couple of Rock fans in here and myself, it's because there are 2 Rock fans here. But that's only... part of the function of putting this program together. It started with the Rock, and I want to expand it to all of you NLL fans, and give us a call. You can call us at 714-242-5250. That's our LA number. If that is a problem for you, you can leave a message at Candid Frank Live Stanishi, and I will call you if you don't have a long-distance plan. You can also hit the link provided and join us using Skype, if that's your other choice. You can Facebook message me and either give us a comment, a question, or, you know, just want to hang in and listen, we can give you a call as well, and then you can listen in real time without the concern of internet connection. Well, there's always a concern for internet connection, but that being that we'll connect with you on the telephone, and that is the best quality to hear the program and also to take part. So we welcome you. Doesn't matter what team you're rooting for. That's good enough for us. So thank you for tuning in. If you are, if you know somebody that would like to make a contribution to the program, please feel free to forwarding my Facebook, account, and we'll call them. We'll see if we'll give them the test. But I promise you, nobody fails. Well, that goes without saying. You know, if you fail, you'll know. I won't have to tell you. Okay, so that covers.
We'll call you back.
Don't call me. I'll call you. No. Vancouver Stealth, Philadelphia Wings. So 15-9 at the Wells Fargo Center over Vancouver. That takes us to the Pepsi Center in Denver, Colorado, the home of the Colorado Mammoth, where they defeated the Minnesota Swarm 14-12. Colorado finally looking like the team that we expected, gentlemen.
Yeah, they did. They did. They gutted it out because I think Minnesota gave them a run for their money. And Minnesota looks like they started moving forward. Caleb Crawford had a good game. You know, Andrew Suter has always been solid for them. And they just seem to be putting pieces in place now.
Yep. It's finally starting to gel, I think. I mean, Colorado is finally rounding into they're finally, I think, shaking off the doldrums and getting to where they need to be. Casey Powell had a monster game with 9 points. John Grant had a monster game with 8. I mean, you just look at the numbers that these guys put up. It's crazy. And when those guys – and I think you mentioned it last week, Gary. That was one of the components they were missing was Casey Powell.
Yes.
Now that he's back, you know, it's awesome.
Yeah. And having Drew Westerfeld back in their lineup, that was huge. Absolutely huge. Because now you have another threat on the floor that can score from anywhere. But we were worried about if Powell would take a regular shift, and man, he was all over the score sheet.
Yeah. Most definitely was. He left an imprint. This is, I think, one of those kind of statement games. Now, unfortunately, the goaltending seemed to be a little weaker on the Mammoth side, but Dylan Ward was in net for them this time instead of Ty. He may be shaking off a little bit of ring rust on that one. Also, a huge credit to Bob Snyder for winning 22 of 29 faceoffs that he took for a 76%. That's definitely on the upside for them. I also gobbled up 18 loose balls last night, so that's huge as well.
Yeah, we could only dream of having that here.
Oh boy.
Well, you know, these things happen.
Yeah.
All right. So the
Patrick Merrill is on the mend, right?
Really does suck to be the team that has some openings that need to be filled. And here I am tonight wearing the Rock jersey that my buddy Jared Harris loaned me. I've only had it for a year.
Aren't you glad he's not persnickety about asking for it back?
Oh, he's not persnickety, but he is. He knows he's going to get it back, and I got to figure out how to do it because with the show on Fridays, I can't come to the Friday games. But once we get one of those weekend games in Toronto, I'll definitely be there with bells on.
Well, your opportunity will be the 15th then.
Oh, wouldn't you know it?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you know it?
Let me guess, you're busy.
My birthday's the 13th.
Well, this I
have
think...
no fear. There's one on the 22nd as well.
good, because timing is everything, isn't it? All right. Well, there was one more game played this past week, and again, it was on Saturday, February 1st at Rexall Place, and boy, the fans were into this one. The Edmonton Rush 8, the visiting Rochester Nighthawks 7. boy, oh boy, somebody threw a lacrosse ball on the floor and a hockey game broke out.
This was definitely a defensive struggle. I mean, you look at the shots that the Edmonton Rush took, though. They had 50 shots on goal that game. And honest to goodness, Matt Vince just stood on his head. But, you know.
And spit out nickels.
Yeah, pretty much. Aaron Bold had another dynamite game. This guy, you know what? When he first broke into the league, I wasn't that impressed. Now I'm just in awe of this guy. It's amazing. His work ethic, his positional play is incredibly solid. He's developed into a really top-flight goalie. So I'm really, really glad to see that Edmonton finally has something going their way. All the chips are falling. Everybody last night seemed to be firing on all cylinders.
This is exactly the game we were talking about last week that was going to happen. It was a defensive struggle. It was offensively very interesting. And, of course, it comes down to an overtime goal to win it. So, really, it had everything.
Yep. One, two, three, four, five, six different goal scorers for Edmonton. And you had one, two, three, four, five, six different goal scorers for Rochester. So it was really spread around. You didn't have one player that really dominated the game, with the exception of, I think, maybe Chris Corbeil on loose balls for Edmonton, one of the better defenders that I've seen come out of in the league recently. side note, Joel McCready set a record, I think, last night. He had 37 minutes in penalties.
Wow.
Three game misconducts, an instigation minor, and a fighting major.
And that was all on one play.
Yes, that was all in one play with 1:16 on the clock. And I'm trying to figure out if that was before or after. I honestly can't remember when he picked those up. But he's got I'm not sure if it's an error in their scoring system either that's showing three separate game misconducts.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's pretty wild.
Wow.
He's a goon. A goon, I tell you.
Hard to tell. So that rounds out our activity from last week. We can move forward now and start discussing the upcoming games, as we do every week. And the first upcoming game is on Friday, February 7th, and it'll be here in Toronto at the Air Canada Centre with the Wings 3-3 playing the Toronto Rock 2-3. These are two teams that basically have to make a decision, and this is one of the games that will help make the decision happen. And they're both in the middle of the pack in their division. Philadelphia right now has the advantage at 3-3, Toronto 2-3. After this game, there'll be a different status, either further away for Toronto or a more equal positioning in the Eastern Division of the National Lacrosse League. What can we anticipate in this game?
I think you're going to see a wide-open game. I think you're going to see a fair amount of scoring. It looks like Toronto's got their touch back with Billings and LeBlanc both firing really well, Sanderson as well. And Buchanan for Philadelphia has just been lights out. Now, I've heard rumors that that Jordan Hall might not be able to make the trip due to work, so that might change some things on the Philadelphia side. I don't know if you've heard anything about that, Aaron.
Unfortunately, I haven't heard anything with that. In that regard. We'll just have to wait and see who shows up, I guess. I would like to see Hall in Toronto, though. That would be awesome. But if it is work commitments, it is work commitments. Unfortunately, at this point in time, the reality is that these players' other jobs pay more than playing in the National Lacrosse League. So for them, it would take priority. But hopefully in the next couple of years with the 7-year CBA that they've got going, they'll be able to pull it together a little bit better.
That's the hope.
Indeed. Now, this is a double-up weekend for Philadelphia. After they get done up here in Toronto, they got to turn right around and guess who they're playing on Saturday the 8th?
Edmonton?
Oh,
that's correct.
So the question is, do you go balls to the wall in the game against Toronto and risk, you know, putting another one in the loss column, or do you play it slightly more conservative and try to bring your A game against the Rush and try to crack their goose egg?
In front of your own home fans as well.
In front of your home fans to boot. That's the question.
Well, there's nothing that says they can't win both games. I think you got to play the game that's in front of you and not worry about the second game. Personally, from my perspective, I would suggest that Philadelphia concentrate against Toronto and try to win that game so that, I understand about the fans and all that. But right now, Philadelphia is on a bit of a roll. They're at 3-3. They want to stay level. They want to beat Toronto. They're, division rivals. Yes, Edmonton is 5-0. But I think a good game against Toronto doesn't mean they can't play a great game against Edmonton. And Edmonton obviously is on a roll. They're 5-0.
Yeah, Edmonton's firing on all cylinders right now. So it's a bit of an intimidating thing. It doesn't matter where you play them, home or road, they're going to bring it. But we'll have to see what happens. I mean, I'm really, first and foremost, I think, though, Philly should be concentrating on trying to take down the Rock, just because it would improve their standing in the division. It's very easy for these two to flip places just based on Friday night's game. So we'll have to see how that goes.
The next game is Buffalo at the Blue Cross Arena in Rochester against the Rochester Nighthawks. Buffalo is 5-1, a bit of a surprise this year. The Rochester Nighthawks are 3-2. That doesn't surprise me, mostly because they are the defending champions, and every team that plays them knows they're playing the defending champion. They're always up for this team. So I think Rochester's doing okay, and I think that 3-2 record is not an indication of how well they're playing. It's more of how well the teams that they're playing. And Buffalo's going to come in. They've got something to prove. And if that chip as big as Lackawanna, as you said, Aaron, is as big as you said it is, they know this is the team they have to beat. And this game is going to be one for the ages. I really believe this one's going to, especially because it's in Rochester. Their fans, they know they're the defending champions. The Bandits would just love to go into Rochester and basically drive them in their own home.
See, personally, I'd like to drive out to this game and just catch it, because the stands are going to be as entertaining as the game itself, because, well, the rivalry is just unmatched between these fans.
Well, it's the I-90 battle, isn't it?
Well, simply being a Toronto fan and just sitting there in the middle and watching it, it's very, very humorous, usually.
The question is, do you wear the Rochester jersey, the Buffalo jersey, or something neutral?
The Rock. It's
generally neutral.
Wear the Rock jersey.
Yeah, then I get both sides on me.
Great idea. There you go. Well, then you go incognito if that's a concern for you.
You know, I'm always concerned about things like that, right?
But before you start giving people that kind of impression, I mean, I don't think there's a group of fans that, much like the CFL, that get along as well as the fans of each of these teams. Yeah, there's a rivalry, but there's also the kinship of being a lacrosse fan, which may have.
Oh, I love going to Rochester. I'm always treated like gold out there. So
there you go.
I absolutely enjoy every time I'm out there.
You know. So, you know, I just want people to know that you were partly kidding. There really is no concern. Lacrosse fans are like no other. They love their game, and in the sense that I'm not saying they're not competitive during the game, but they're just as friendly as much animosity as there is, or apparent animosity at the stadium. At the bar afterwards, not so much animosity.
Most definitely not.
There you go. I've met a few Buffalo fans, so I've seen it firsthand. And a few Rochester fans. Rochester, really, more than any team in the National Lacrosse League, pretty much this is the only Class A league that they're involved in. Everything else is not minor, but minor league. And I think Rochester fans are very proud of the Nighthawks and the job they've done. And they show it at home in support of their team. They love their team.
Oh, most definitely.
That they do, yes.
Okay, so Rochester, coming off a loss, has, they want to try and stay above 500. Buffalo's going to come in, the team that wants to usurp, wants to chant the king is dead, right? Long live the new king, the Buffalo Bandits. That's the approach that this game's going to go. You've said that, Gary, that you would love to be in the stands for that game. I can't imagine not wanting to be in the stands for that game.
No, Norton. It's just going to be an electric atmosphere. Right from mid-afternoon onward, as soon as the stock opens up, right on through until when the stock closes down after the game. It'll be an electric evening there. And if you have a chance to get out there, that would definitely be a game you'd want to go see.
What time are we leaving, Gary?
Mid-afternoon, if you want, Frank.
If you really decide to go, give me a call. It's a Saturday, so I don't know. I got to check with the foreman over here, the boss. The 8th. February.
Yeah,
yeah, this weekend. I'm free. She's dialing her boyfriend right now.
There you go.
so basically, yeah. So give me a call. Are you up for it, Aaron?
Unfortunately, I can't this weekend, Frank.
I have other commitments. That's not the right answer.
I know it's not the right answer for you.
That's the wrong answer.
No. It's the right answer for me.
Oh, what's up with this weekend? Never mind. I don't want to get into your personal stuff. Yeah. Well, you know, Gary's great company. Will we be traveling alone?
I have to check, but I believe my wife is still working while I'm finished at noon.
What about your son?
I don't think he's going to make the trip. No.
Okay. All right. So it'll be just we're going stag then if we go.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I got to tell you, I've never been to a Rochester Nighthawks game in Rochester.
Stay hydrated, Frank, and by hydrated, I don't mean barley sandwiches.
Okay, you mean water.
Yeah, that arena is stinky hot.
It is always hot.
Oh, cool. Oh, maybe that's the wrong word to use at this point. Yeah, we'll look into that, Gary. We'll keep in touch on that one.
For sure.
We could probably talk John Granger into coming, too.
That would be interesting.
Oh, wait. Well, he's on, never mind. He may be otherwise busy as well. All right. So it's hot at the Rochester Blue Cross
at the
Arena.
Memorial, yeah, it's really hot.
Is that why they call it the Blue Cross Arena?
Not necessarily, no. But it is.
It is
very, 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 very warm. That's the only.
Be still, my palpitating heart. There you go. All right. So the third game on Saturday, February 8th, Calgary Roughnecks are into the XL Energy Center in St. Paul, Minnesota, to visit the Minnesota Swarm. Calgary sits at 2-3. Minnesota Swarm 1-4. Really a slow start for them this year. They looked promising in the playoffs last year. What's up with this game?
I think it's going to be a very, very good game. I thought I'd seen that Minnesota had actually found something in the last game against Colorado that they can use in this one because they just fell short. And I think that if Calgary takes them a little bit lightly, they're going to be in for a long evening.
Aaron?
Most definitely. This is one of the games. This is one of those games where the underdog can very definitely reach up and bite the opposition. At this point in the season, where Minnesota is currently sitting in the standings, if they don't make a move, there could be issues. And I think that's being generous.
And those issues, would they include some serious changes at 1-5 if that were to happen?
I'm thinking a fire sale is what I'm thinking if it doesn't go quite the way they hope.
And well, so the Vultures will be circling that team after the game if it doesn't end up in Minnesota's way?
I really honestly think so. They have to do something.
Well, it's funny because they have more first-round draft picks stockpiled than any team that I've seen in years. So they can afford to make deals. But I don't think they imagined that losing Ryan Benesch would be this damaging to their offense.
Yeah, I don't think that was anything that they actually – I don't think that was something they counted on. I honestly don't. But, you know, if they do drop to 1-5, something's got to give. So, and the fact of the matter is, if they do win, which would be great for them, and The Rock lose, hey-o, we're tied for the basement.
Yep.
So, you know, that game, now that game on Friday against Philadelphia takes on added significance. So, you know, I mean, Philadelphia does have a game in hand on Toronto right now, and that's fine, but if they can't pull their heads out of their asses and get something done and put together more than one solid game on a weekend, then The Rock are going to find themselves facing some serious issues.
Yeah, that could be a problem. And, you know, we're not talking about the beginning of the season. We're working our way to the middle of the season now. So,
yeah.
You know, to sit in the basement is not going to be a good thing, considering only the top three teams in each division are going to the playoffs under the new formats.
And
that's good to be looking up.
And that's the key. The key is now the season now, there's not the opportunity now to make any, you know, the ground to make up gets smaller and smaller, at least opportunity-wise, with less games being left.
The hills get bigger and bigger, and they get tougher to climb.
Yeah, and the problem is you have to hope the other team loses. You don't want to be in that position where the making the playoffs is out of your hands, and that is what will end up happening if the Rock and, of course, Minnesota don't pull up their socks and play with a little more dedication and success. The final thing
that gets a little scary is that we haven't faced Edmonton yet this year. We've only faced Rochester once, and still have to face them two more times. We still have Buffalo at least one more time, so it's not an easy climb if you're falling behind.
Yeah, the games they have to win. There are games you have to win, and there are games you can't afford to lose. It's all about winning. Win and you're in. Lose,
exactly.
And then it gets a little dicey. So the Langley Event Center is the last game location for the last game of next weekend and of next week. The Vancouver Stealth, they're being visited by the Colorado Mammoth, who are at 3-5, and Vancouver at 2-5. And it's a nice segue because these are two teams that by that same definition, they're on the cusp of being on the outside, you know, looking in. And this is a very transitory game. Both teams are in the same division. Both teams are very close, nip and tuck. And Vancouver, after a pretty good start, they've been having some troubles lately. Has reality set in as far as Vancouver's concerned?
I think so, and I think you're talking about two teams going in opposite directions. I think Colorado's moving in the right direction, and Vancouver's already started making moves, and I think there's a lot more moves to come if they lose this game. It's what I said. It's this team's going in opposite directions. Colorado's going to get stronger and stronger from what I can see. Vancouver, I don't see them getting any stronger.
No, and that's a real issue that Vancouver has to face is, are they as good as they think they are, or are they limited by the roster that they've got? And
well, they've got a great goalie in Tyler Richards, but as we've seen on the weekend, when he falters,
yeah,
you have Matt Roich waiting around, and we've all been through the Roich era, and we know what kind of relief you can get from that. So that's not the answer. So they have a real issue there.
Well, I mean, we'll have to see how this one plays out. I really think at this point, Colorado is like the sleeping bear. You know, they've been kicked. You woke them up. So it's either go to the den or make sure that they go down. And I don't know. I'll be honest. I don't know if the Stealth are up to the task. Let's hope some of their players are listening and decide to prove me wrong.
Yeah, I'd love to see that because I'd like to see them in the mix.
Most definitely. You know, I mean, Calgary and Edmonton are great teams, but Vancouver and the Vancouver area is more of a home for lacrosse than anything else. I mean, when you think about the teams that you've got out there, you've got the New Westminster Salmon Bellies, you've got the Coquitlam Adirondacks, the Nanaimo Timbermen, you've got the Victoria Shamrocks, the Langley Thunder. You know, I mean, there's a lot of history out there, and Vancouver has to acquit themselves nobly.
Well, plus it's their first year in Vancouver after being in, you know, San Jose and Washington,
mm-hmm.
and you really don't want them to come out completely flat and just kill all momentum coming into the Langley Event Center.
Yeah, it's very important. they need to accomplish some good things to keep the fan interest going as well, because we all know that the fans don't take to losing that well in any sport, in any league, right? So, yeah, so that's let's take a look at the standings. But first, I'll remind you, you're listening to Candid Frank Live with Gary Grube, Aaron William Freeland, and myself, Frank Stanishi. And this is, of course, the Candid Frank Live Show National Lacrosse Edition. This is our sixth episode. We hope you're enjoying what we're bringing to you. And if you have an interest in making a comment, you can call us at 714-242-5250. As well, you can link up with us going on our link and then joining us in Skype, on Skype, or you can Facebook message me at Candid Frank Live Stanishi on Facebook, and you can either leave me your number, we'll give you a call, a message, or a comment, or a question, and we will address it as best we can. So again, thank you for tuning in. And the Buffalo Bandits fan group, we'll be getting them on one of these weeks. And if you're a part of a fan group, please, you're welcome to be on as well. That's what this is about. It's a show by the fans, for the fans of the National Lacrosse League. Every city, every team is more than welcome. This starts here in, I live in Mississauga, the boys here live in Toronto. But then again, that's not such a bad thing considering most of the players generally live out this way or, well, at least in Canada anyway. So it's a game that we love here in Canada and in the United States, they love it as well. They may be more enamored of the outdoor game, but that doesn't mean that all these U.S. teams in the National Lacrosse League join this half-heartedly after all. You've got the Buffalo Bandits and the Rochester Nighthawks sitting 1-2 in the Eastern Division, which brings us to the standings. And Buffalo's 5-1, and they're full value for that 5-1 record. We talked a little bit about why they're there. Maybe repeat why they're there and flesh it out. Gary, you first. What puts them in first place?
I think they've bought into Troy Cordingley's defensive system. They've had stellar goaltending all year. And their offense, with a few little tinkers and a few little moves, as well as some of the old-time great players, have all come back to life at the same time, and they've just been unstoppable offensively.
Aaron?
The other thing that they've done is they've managed to keep themselves out of the sin bin. That, I think, is the most important thing so far this season.
Yeah, you've repeated that a lot this year. Is that because of how they played last year?
Last year and in previous years, they've always seemed to run into penalty trouble because, you know, they suffer Canadian vapor lock. They suffer cranial vapor lock, sorry. And they just, they can't seem to get it together. Now, go ahead.
In fact, on Saturday's game against the Rock were taking two penalties, any one Buffalo penalty all through the game.
Yep. And it's the fact that they've got this new measure of control, which is absolutely awesome.
Discipline.
It makes them a joy to watch, but at the same time, it makes me really scared because, dang it, we need to beat them.
and very frustrating to play a disciplined team like that.
Oh, yeah.
So we have them sitting at 5-1. We have Rochester, the defending champions, at 3-2. And like I said before, I think their record is a good one considering they won the championship last year. And it doesn't matter where they sit, whether it be in the first, second, or third seed, they're a concern regardless, aren't they?
Sure, and keep in mind that both of their losses were by one goal. So they weren't blown out of any games. They could have gone the other way. They could be easily 5-0.
And
so
at this
they have
point...
They're a team that waits in the tall grass.
Yeah, they're definitely a team that needs to be feared. Then we come to the critical point in the standings, third place in the East, where you have an extra team, so you have two teams to beat in the East to make it to the playoffs. And the Wings right now, they occupy at 3-3 the final playoff position. They get a chance to, against the Rock this week, they get to distance themselves a little bit and be more of a concern for first, less of a concern for third, and a bigger problem for Toronto, the Rock.
Yeah, a lot of that depends on how the Rock are going to play this game. If they come out flat-footed there, they're going to wind up being 2-4 and really be looking up at all the other guys.
and not in a very good position now that we're, you know, heading towards the halfway pole.
No, not at all. You know, on the other hand, if they do, you know, come out with a strong game and pull out a win, you know, that's a really, really tight spot for third.
And a little momentum, you know, when you're in this position or any of these teams in the middle of the pack, you know, a win can go a long way to building confidence. And, you know, the Rock haven't had an impressive year thus far. A win against Philadelphia could be enough of a confidence booster for them to feed on in the ensuing weeks, no?
Definitely.
That, Frank, my phone kind of cut out for a second there.
No, just
definitely.
I was saying
and
the
look
momentum.
At their upcoming schedule. They have Rochester coming up, and then they have Minnesota after that. So, you know, you're looking at Philadelphia this week where we need to get that victory because you have the Nighthawks coming in here the following week.
Yeah, and Minnesota, you want to keep them at bay.
Exactly.
You know, right now where they sit, you know, they're not a concern.
And then right around
the
corner, you have Edmonton to finish out the month, so it's not an easy month.
No, and if Edmonton, you know, doesn't or wins this weekend coming up, you know, that'll give the Rock an opportunity to put a scratch mark on that goose egg.
Definitely, definitely.
So there'll be a momentum there for the Rock in the ensuing weeks. Yeah, so Edmonton leads the pack in the West. They have been a nice surprise, not only, you know, on the score sheet in the standings, but also in the stands. They're getting a pretty good crowd out there. That's something that's got to be satisfying the folks at the National Lacrosse League head offices.
Well, I think compared to their first couple of years, the attendance uptick is definitely something welcome and definitely something they want to see. It hasn't been an easy row to hoe for Edmonton. You know, it's tricky to try to establish lacrosse there because it's not one of the traditional hotbeds. So I'm glad to see that they're doing well. I'm glad to see that the machine is fired up and going on all cylinders. So hopefully they'll be able to keep that momentum going.
I think they will. I think Edmonton, you know, they may not finish, you know, with no losses this year. They may even have a bit of a dip. But one thing they've established is consistency, and they've done it on both sides of the ball. They've had more than reasonable goaltending. So, you know, they've got all what it takes to finish first in that division, don't they?
I think so.
Yeah, most definitely.
Now, it would be safe to say that division, while it may be weaker, there are only four teams, so only one team will get eliminated prior to the playoffs. So, you know, it's a serious a matchup with those last three teams, Calgary at 2-3, Colorado at 3-5, and Vancouver at 2-5. There really could be any, you know, playing consistently bad will put you out of the playoffs in this division. There's not as much pressure to play really well. Because there's only one team way ahead of everybody else. So really, these three teams, starting with Calgary, they got to find some consistency in their game, don't they?
Most yes, definitely. I agree totally. Because if Vancouver, for some reason, with the moves, if they actually get hot, then we have a cluster for second, third, and fourth. It's anybody's ballgame right down to the end of the year at that stage. And then Edmonton just looks like they're just, you know, head and shoulders above the field.
Now, if
you
only
have so many bad weekends in a row.
Yeah, and if I take what you guys said earlier, what we're looking at here really, in reality, the way things look and momentum being what momentum is at this point and you know, looking back into what's happened recently, Colorado's pretty safe to finish second, which means Calgary and Vancouver will really need to decide between the two of them who's going to finish in third. Is that a fair statement, guys? If I'm reading between the lines or hearing between the lines that you guys have been stating?
I think that's the case totally.
Yeah. It's going to be them fighting for the last playoff spot. I think now that Colorado has been poked,
Edmonton continues, if Edmonton continues to play fantastic, it will be between Calgary and Vancouver to decide who the last team is from the West.
And Vancouver seems to be the team that's willing to rebuild, which gives Calgary by default, not that, you know, not in a negative sense, but by default means that they probably will finish third. And does that mean if we, the experts, are arriving at these conclusions, are the teams aware of it, and will they be playing towards that? Or do you see a surprise in the future that Vancouver, because we have seen many times in seasons where teams have really added by subtraction. That's been known to happen as well, where if you have the right group of guys in the room, you take a guy out or two guys out, and all of a sudden the room gets a little better. That's happened before, and that could be something that happens with Vancouver.
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping not, since we got the one of the guys. So I'm hoping
there you go.
Third.
Well, we know that he's willing to stand up for his teammates, which I think if there's a weakness in the Rock this year is, and maybe this isn't fair, but they really aren't playing that big. And, you know, size isn't necessarily about height or width. It's the size of the guy's heart. And I'm not saying that there isn't any heart on the Rock team, but sometimes you need an injection of, let's just say, devil may care, do whatever it takes to win.
No, I think you're right. I think there has to be someone in the dressing room to take the reins and just say, hell with it and gun it. That's
Let's not worry about what happened yesterday. Let's talk about, let's deal with tomorrow.
No, I agree. There's got to be a spark plug for Vancouver. There's got to be something to get them fired up, because I don't want to see them move again after only 1 year. You know.
There you go.
That would end with my plans.
Yeah, I hear you. Now we're talking about the standings. Any comment about the standings that we didn't make that needs to be out there? We said that the top three teams make the playoffs, and we're aware. Go ahead, Aaron.
Sorry, Frank. I think what people need to be aware of is the awesome amount of parity. If you look at Rochester, Philly, and Toronto, 3-2, 3-3, 2-3. You know, you look at Calgary and Colorado with a few more games under their belts. Calgary could be in the same position as Colorado. You have to be aware that this is just an incredibly level league right now. And that only makes the games all the more exciting. And I'm going to shut up and let you talk for a bit, Frank.
No, it's okay. So basically, we have two teams, one in each division that are basically, well, you know, ahead of the pack. And then the rest are basically in the pack in both East and West. So, you know, and as you guys both believe, the games are going to be very interesting. And there's a lot at stake, you know. And the other thing I wanted to talk about the standings before we run into the players, which will be a fine segue. With the shorter benches, you know, being tired becomes an issue. And a system that's, more conducive to players, especially playing back-to-back weekend games, you know, with each game being so critical. That, you know, there's a lot of coaching involved this season, I think more than seasons past. And, you know, so far it looks like, you know, in Buffalo we've got a genius, in Edmonton we've got a genius. And winning does that, right? Anybody who has a winning record, a good winning record, obviously the coach is a genius. Next year when they're like 2-5, we'll realize that they got stupid over the summer, right? But having said that, that seems to be the case right now, you know. The coaching's been doing well. Those teams are they're flowing really well from game to game. They seem to have the right level of energy, the right level of mental preparedness for the games, and that's why they're ahead. The other teams are playing catch up a little bit, but then again, you know, you don't have to win the division to win the championship, and all one has to do is look to last year and realize that in the first playoff game, the Rock lost to Minnesota on that fateful Sunday. So your record during the season becomes irrelevant, and the most important thing that you have to do during the season to close out the standings is you have to play well enough to be in the playoffs, and then well enough to get your thing together, whatever it is, your you know, whatever your tagline is, whatever your go-to moves are, have them working on all cylinders once you get into the playoffs. So it's almost like slipping it into gear. Not that anybody can go from trying really hard or not trying really hard and then going to playoffs and flip a switch, because you really don't flip a switch. There has to be a momentum and a confidence, and also, you know, individual players have to be playing to ready to play, you know, playoff lacrosse. We know that it's, you know, one and you're done. So, you know, that, again, it's very important to have momentum on your side and not get overconfident. So nobody really at this point in the season can be considered a favorite to win the championship. But, you know, at this point, will you make the playoffs? Because if you don't, you can't win a championship, which is what it boils down to.
Now, I do just want to mention that they did actually change the format slightly this year for the playoffs.
Help me out.
They've gone to 2-game eliminations. So basically what that means is you play 2 games, and if at the end of those 2 games a winner is not decided, you proceed to play 10-minute mini-games until the winner is crowned.
Does that mean that the home team for the second game is the one higher in the standings?
That is correct. Basically what that means is if Toronto plays Philadelphia and a winner isn't found, then Dallas will go on to play Wyoming in the East-West Northern Division, and then all SAC races will be held on alternate Sundays until we finally get a winner.
Ah, okay.
It's a way to bring more lacrosse to the fans. I know a lot of us were crying for more playoff games. A lot of us really wanted to see something like that. This is a reasonable compromise. It's not possible, unfortunately, to do best of three or best of five series. It was tried once, but just trying to get the players together for 3 games to 5 games was just not going to work. So the way that they've done this, I can appreciate the take on it. We'll have to see how it works. But
I think it's a great way to do it. If it's the best way to do it, if you want to have multiple games and you can't have too many, I mean, it's really splitting between a best of three, and it really is a best of three, just that it's not 3 games.
Exactly.
And it is a best of three with the home team or the team that finishes higher getting an extra home game. It isn't a home game, but the deciding mini game is at the, you know, on the same night that you play your playoff game, but still that gives the advantage to a team that has a better season, which is always good. No guarantees. People can win on the road. We've seen it.
But it also means you have a chance to screw up. Which is, I think, something Toronto would have appreciated. You know?
There you go.
Especially after losing 20-13 in the playoffs last year.
Absolutely. All right, we'll remind you again, you're listening to Candid Frank Live with Aaron William Freeland and Gary Grube, Wednesday nights, 9 to 11 Eastern Standard Time, Buffalo Time, Toronto Time, if you don't know what Eastern Standard Time is. The phone number here is 714-242-5250 if you'd like to call in and you have a question, a comment, or just an opinion that you'd like to share. Please feel free to call. You can Skype as well after you hit the link. And we hope to hear from you sometime soon. The email address for the show is candidfranklive@gmail.com. Kind of easy to remember, I hope. And that's one word, candidfranklive@gmail.com. If you want to send me an email and, you know, maybe have a suggestion for a person to be interviewed or a person to be involved in the program. And again, thanks for listening, folks. Okay, now let's go to the statistics, which is what we do. And we're sadly approaching the time when Gary starts to yawn a little bit because he has an early day. How are you tonight, Gary? Are you okay?
I'm doing pretty good, Frank. I think I'm going to hang around for a while.
Oh, there you go. Okay, maybe he has a day off tomorrow and he's not telling us. He just wants to feel like a hero.
I'll just feel like a hero for a while.
There you go. You're more than welcome to. You're my hero. When it comes to lacrosse, you're my hero. All right. So the points leaders, Adam Jones leads with 40. He's followed by John Grant, Jr. at the same amount, being 40. Jordan Hall
36, Kyle Buchanan with 35, and Rhys Dutch at 35. Guys, scoring this week, there was some talk about some great games by players. Gary, you want to start?
Yeah, but, it was Buchanan had a week and a half. That was great to see. He was firing on all cylinders, whereas Matthews didn't do as much as he's done, Matthews and Jones both didn't do as much as they had in weeks past. So it was nice to see things move around a little bit.
Aaron?
One thing I wanted to point out, and just lurking outside the top five that you mentioned, is G-Bill. Garrett, in his last game, had 5 goals and 4 assists for 9 points. So he had a bit of a big game against Vancouver in their 17-12 win. Glad to see that. He is sitting one game behind Hall and Buchanan of Philly. He's sitting 2 games behind Dutch and 3 games behind Grant and Jones. Once he fully hits his stride, look out. He's going to be right back up there. Same goes for Stephane LeBlanc. Again, he's only played 5 games. He's got 28 points. He's just outside the top 10. He had 1 goal and 8 assists in their last game. Josh Sanderson is creeping up the standings as well. He's a little further back with 24 points. He had a 3 goal and 5 assist night on the Friday. So, I mean, these guys are scoring monsters. They can put the team on the back and single-handedly carry them to victory. They had excellent, excellent games on Friday. Not so much on the Saturday, but that's okay. These things happen. Look for the Rock Boys to be making their presence felt in the top 10 after this next weekend. That's my prediction, at any rate.
Wait, fair enough.
5 points the next game, and they're lost to Buffalo. Josh Sanderson went 3-1. Stephane LeBlanc had 2 goals and 4 assists. Even Casey Beers is getting in on the action. He had 2 goals and 2 assists, and they lost to Buffalo. So they're going to start making some noise really soon. I wish they'd started to make.
Well, they're going to have to, and hopefully that for those of you that are Rock fans, that noise will help them to advance up the standings. The goals leaders, Adam Jones with 25. He's got a big lead over Rhys Dutch at 18. John Grant Jr. 17. Jordan Hall 16. And Dane Doby with 16 as well.
No real surprises there. I mean, Jones was hot despite a slow game this weekend. He only had 3, but the important thing is that he's still up there. He's still being relatively consistent. Rhys Dutch has always been a threat. So I'm glad to see he's up there with 18, and John Grant I think is just getting warmed up. So we'll have to see what happens over the course of the next weekend, see how he does.
Well, he may be able to, as you said, about other players and him as well. That if he keeps going and he picks up steam, that mammoth team's going to feel nice and comfortable on his back.
Most definitely.
So now, Gary, goal leaders, any dark horses in your, on your horizon?
Well, I just I agree with what Aaron's saying because, you know, again, the Rock haven't played as many games. And what I saw Friday night from Billings was just absolutely heartwarming to see him come out of the little funk that he had been in. And Stephane LeBlanc has been hot all year. So these guys are going to be up in the numbers real soon. So you're going to see a big shift in the next week or two. When they all catch up in the games.
Perfect. Also, in the assists, John Grant is leading with 23, along with Ryan Ward and Garrett Billings, aforementioned Garrett Billings of the Toronto Rock. Sean Evans at 22, Kyle Buchanan at 21. So, you know, that's the assists, a tight race in the assists, the opposite of the goals.
Well, the one thing is, you know, like I said, we're talking about Billings. The mark of a really good offensive player is that even when he's not putting it in, he's assisting other people put it in, and that's why he's up in the top assists here. The one surprise that I have when we just switched from goals, I realized, is Sean Evans. Again, he's got 22 assists, but he's nowhere to be found in the goals, where, you know, he's been a really hot figure for Calgary for the last year and change.
Yeah, Sean Evans, Dane Smith has been a pleasant surprise as well. I've been glad to see him all the way up there. Him and Benesh at 21 and 20 assists. They're kind of turning into another dynamic duo. I think with Dane and Benesh feeding, again, Tavares and Stainhouse, you're looking at this is the makings of a really, really potent offense for Buffalo. The fact that they're currently sitting where they are is, I think, evidence of the fact that those guys have been clicking. So that's a good thing to see.
So right now, what we're seeing is we're getting to the point now where the game differential is not so important anymore. So we're really starting to see which players are playing much better. One of the things that there isn't much separation is power play goals. Jordan Hall leads with 6, Jeff Shatler at 5, Ryan Benesh, Tracy Kolesky, and Colin Doyle. We have a rock now in the top 5 in power play goals. Colin, you know, big player for a long time for the Toronto Rock.
No, it's good to see him up in that list. Him and Kolesky have been around the league for a long time. So for that matter, has Shatler. He's getting up there. I'm just glad to see that they are consistent and they are still potting those.
And that's a good thing.
Most definitely. With the fact that a lot of teams are taking fewer penalties this year, the power play goals do tend to get more important, as we mentioned last week, because the power play opportunities don't come as often. So if you can capitalize on those, you're that much further ahead of the game.
And Colin Doyle is the captain of our power play regardless. So as he goes, so does the team. So if he's not scoring them, he's setting them up. So he's usually double and triple teamed throughout it anyways. So for him to keep putting points in there is terrific.
Now, the one thing I wanted to look at was actually shorthanded goals, because I know we saw a couple of the goals. Damon Edwards has one for Toronto, so does Jesse Gamble. Chris Corbeil has 2. Benesh has 2. I mean, a lot of people don't tend to take that into consideration when they look at the scoring statistics, but those shorties, those shorthanded goals become very important because they give your team a huge psychological lift. So the fact that we do have players that are actually potting shorthanded goals now means that, you know what, these guys are difference makers for their teams.
Absolutely. Now, let's go to loose ball leaders. Bob Snyder, 95. Jay Thorenberg, 67. Jeff Snyder, 62. Brody Merrill, 60. Jordan McIntosh with 49. A lot of separation there between the top 5 in the league.
No, Bob Snyder's always been a vacuum cleaner. So has Jeff Snyder. But it's nice to see Jay Thorenberg in there, and because he's been a staple on winning faceoffs. But now to see him at the loose ball leaders as well is terrific. And Jordan McIntosh has always been a reliable player that way.
Now, Aaron? I was going to say, lost my train of thought, got derailed, Frank.
Sorry, didn't mean to cut off one of the tracks on the train track there, buddy.
It's all good. It happens easier these days. To see Bob Snyder's getting up there with the loose balls. Toronto used to have a guy like that. Went by the nickname of Scoop or Hoover.
And I wonder why.
Yeah, you know. But it is nice to see another guy that's willing to step up and take the crown. He's a difference maker for Colorado. And it's
totally.
Something it's really good to see. A lot of people, I think, underestimate the importance of loose balls and why it's a very, very good statistic. I still giggle every time I say it, though.
So do I.
It's the 11-year-old in me. But the fact that he's outpacing Thorenberg by almost a third, even though he's only played 2 more games, just goes to indicate that he's just that much more important.
And that's not to suggest that there aren't any other retainers out there, because there's a few. And you know, loose balls are basically up for grabs, and they're momentum changers. And it's very important on the defensive side of the ball to be able to create a loose ball. And it's one thing to create it, but then it's picking up that loose ball that really does change the game in your favor, if you can do that more often than not. And Bob Snyder leads the league. You know, he has the next guy is 28 loose balls behind him. So when you're talking 95 in total that he has, 25% of them is basically what he's getting that others don't. So that's awesome. And also another form of loose ball is a face-off win. And again, Bob Snyder. So obviously there's an inherent talent for scooping the ball. Again, that nickname, Scoop. And essentially, we talked last week about some players that are noted for this might have a tighter stick, you know, basically that means that the ball can go in but doesn't come out as easily. And that may be, you know, like comparable to a hockey player and the curve on his stick. The curve is created to enhance his strength. In this case, you know, Bob Snyder's strength is you know, attacking balls that are free and that he can take into possession and turn over to create an offensive opportunity for his team. And he leads in this by a lot and even more than the loose balls. He has 137, while Jay Thornbear, who's second, at 94, Jeff Snyder at 83, Tyler Garrison at 82, and C.J. Constabile at 76. So this guy, you know, when a ball is up for grabs, he's there most of the time.
Sorry.
You're still giggling at that loose ball thing. you should wear tighter
shorts.
I get my
stick on
say.
It.
You should wear tighter shorts. Maybe you won't have that problem. Bob Snyder, obviously, you know, maybe that's what we should call it. He gets the tight shorts award for this week on face-offs and loose balls. Penalty minutes. We touched on this new Rock player that, you know, basically a little more physicality to the Rock team. This year with the shorter bench, is physicality something that has been watered down a little bit, gentlemen? Is that the case this year, or do you agree, disagree, or your opinion?
Well, I was going to when you look at the way that the game is played, there's a little more emphasis now on being faster, not necessarily on you know, having a guy out there to even the score. So I think we have seen overall penalty minutes drop, which is a good thing, I think, for the league. And you get to see players doing what they do, which is play. You're not dealing with the short man situations or the man up situations. The physicality is definitely more important, but the real priority is to keep that in check.
And to apply it at key moments. In a game, or keep, you know, you got to keep it on a shorter leash with the shorter
bench. Exactly.
Gary?
Yeah, no, I agree totally.
Okay, well, that's good enough for me too. So Joel McCready leads with 41, Rory Smith with 22 minutes, Matt Beers 22 as well, Dan Ball 20 along with Stephen Keough. I guess that's how you pronounce his name. Is it Keough or Q?
I'm not sure. I think it's Keough. I've also seen
okay.
It pronounced Cuff, but
yeah, no, I believe it's Keough.
Okay, so but Cuff would be good because he's tough.
Hey, that rhymes.
There you go. We can do our next show doing rap. What do you think?
I'm gonna pass.
Yeah,
me too.
Pass on that one. Say
McCready
Baltimore's up there just with the one game, so. But Rory Smith and Matt Beers, these guys are genuine game changers in that regard. They're usually not frivolous minutes when they're taking them.
Now, go ahead. Sorry, Aaron. Go ahead.
They're well-earned minutes, I think, when these guys take penalties. They're not out there to just knock heads. They are there for a purpose. And the penalties that they take are not
frivolous.
Exactly. You're not getting a penalty while standing in your defensive end while John Tavares is trying to get a shot on goal, basically, is what I'm saying.
Well,
the penalty's taken on the right side of the floor.
Yeah, and you know, it's basically process of elimination. It's not so much what you try to do when you're playing physical. It's what you're trying not to do. And if moving your legs is the reason why you got a penalty, or the lack of willingness to move your legs is why you got a penalty, that's not a good thing in a coach's mind. If you're, you know, it's the penalties that are lazy. Those are the ones that, you know, give coaches gray hair. If you're moving really hard and you're being aggressive and maybe the coach needs to rein you in a little bit, I think that's the preference a coach has. You know, it's much easier to rein somebody in than try to lead them or explain to them how to play. So, you know, there's something about aggressiveness that's a positive, and I think coaches like it for that reason, is that they get to rein the guy in and go, okay, you're doing really well, keep digging really hard. You got to have, and that's probably the reason why The Rock made the trade that they did. I think initiation when it comes to physical contact, is important. Especially if it helps to give guys the feeling and the latitude to perform at a level that they can. Because sometimes if, it's master or be mastered, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. And just the only reason we're talking about The Rock in this situation is because they would rather master, and that's why they made the trade, I think. And they're looking for their players, the good ones, to not to have the fear of God in their opponents, but to at least let the opponents know that there's a price to be paid if you're going to take those kinds of liberties. And a lot of times, it's like you hear many a time, there's players that play on teams that allow the rest of the players on their team to play a little bigger. And I think one of the biggest weaknesses that's been identified for The Rock is that they're not playing very big. And that's a problem in lacrosse, because it's a very physical game. And physicality has an effect on the outcome.
No, I agree. But you also, I saw Chris White practicing Friday before the game, so I imagine he's close. When you get Chris White back here, too, and you have a lot more grit again, so they're going to become a very, very difficult team to play against.
That's what they need. They need to be more
100%.
Difficult to play against. And that's the hope. So the shots on goal leaders, John Grant has 79, Adam Jones 76, Reese Dutch 72, Drew Westervelt 56, along with Garrett Billings. Now, Billings is moving up. He's becoming more of an offensive concern. It's something that is welcoming for The Rock. It's not about being in the top five in statistics. It's about how you play the game. And Garrett is finally, I guess, his touch, right?
Well, he mentioned in a couple post-game interviews that I saw that he was finally trusting his shot more. And he finally had gotten to the point where he just said, to heck with it, I'm just going to start shooting more, because that's how you score. So he finally just decided to open up, and as you saw in the last game against Vancouver, he started knocking them down from the outside, which was awesome.
Oh yeah, and they were just pinpoint shots. Like it was just wonderful to see these top corner shots and these outside shots and these backward, everything that we'd been accustomed to Garrett Billings doing, coming back in that one game. It was just, you know. The future looks very, very bright for the team scoring-wise when you got him, LeBlanc, Doyle, Sanderson, everybody firing. So they
and
can't
it has
just
to happen.
One player.
Yeah, and it has to happen. I mean, in the league right now, there's a lot of middling teams, a lot of teams that can go either way at this point in the season. And if the right players play as well as they can, if the leaders on the team lead, and by that I mean on the floor, I'm one of these people, and I'm probably going to make a few enemies by saying this. I'm not a big fan of guys who are leaders in the room. The reason I say that isn't because I don't respect leadership in the room. I just think it doesn't mean nothing if that leadership doesn't transcend the room and work its way onto the floor, because I happen to think that it's the leadership on the floor that makes the difference. The leadership on the room for me is reserved for the assistant coaches, the coaches, and that's their place. On the floor, that's where the players get to determine, you know, where they stand in a leadership position. And Garrett Billings has to be a guy that starts to score for the Rock, and he has to do this stuff, this offensive stuff, and Colin Doyle has to give the power play that much more respect. And I'm only using this team and these players as an example. The same is true for other players on other teams that are in the same position as these two guys. You have leaders on your team. They got to lead on the floor. I get the leading in the dressing room, but without it on the floor, it doesn't really mean a hill of beans to me. It's important that you produce on the floor, have an effect on the game sheet. If you don't do that, you're really not a leader. Leaders lead, and it shows on the game sheet, and or it shows on the floor. And it doesn't have to be scoring on the floor. It doesn't have to be assists on the floor. It doesn't have to be loose ball wins on the floor. But it has to be how you play the game and how you inspire your teammates. And to me, that's the definition of leadership. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't lead in the room as well. But again, for me, it's what happens on the floor. And these teams that we've been talking about, like Philadelphia, like Vancouver, you know, Vancouver might be you know, doing something. We don't see many of them on the leaders lists here. You know, it's about leadership. And these teams, you know, they all have great players on their teams because these are the best of the best to play in the National Lacrosse League. You know, the difference between a guy who looks really good on one team and doesn't look good on the other team, it's a function of all the rest of the players. It's about team play, you know. And none of these guys, starting with we're getting into goaltenders now, like Anthony Cosmo, who leads with five wins. Cosmo doesn't win if the guys in front of him, aren't doing what they need to do defensively. Right, guys?
Exactly. Exactly. And he's had a stellar year, and he's seen the ball very well. But, yeah, his defense has been much better than they've been in the last few years. So, you know, even when, you know, the rebounds come out, they're there with loose balls to get it out of there.
Yeah, you can't do it alone. Anthony leads with five victories. Aaron Bold has four. Evan Kirk, Matt Vince, and Dylan Ward have three apiece. Any goaltender having had a great week last week? Is there a guy you would give a star for last week in your minds?
Well, I thought Matt Vince stood on his head again. He's the reason why it stayed close. He faced 60 shots, was it? Something insane. He was just peppered. And he gave up 9 goals and lost in overtime. So.
And he did what you want from a goaltender in any sport, give
sure.
his team a chance to win.
Yep, he kept you in the game the whole way through and left it up to you guys to do it on offense. And, you know, again, Aaron Bold had a great game on the other side as well. But I just think Matt Vince just had just a phenomenal game.
Yes.
Evan Kirk also put in a solid week's work for Philadelphia as well. Don't misunderstand, you know, Vancouver is no slouch. The fact that he managed to hold them to as few goals as he did is indicative of a rather well-played game. He held them to 9 goals on how many shots again? Hold on. He held them to 9 goals on 54 shots. So, like
not
Vince,
bad.
Peppered. And on the other side of the floor, again, Philadelphia had 54 shots as well, and Tyler Richards played very decently. He had 44 of the 54 shots. Matt Roich had the other 9.
And that's after coming off playing, you know, Toronto the night before, and he got peppered there too, so.
There you go. Now, goals against average leaders, Aaron Bold leads at 8.19 goals per game. Pretty good. Matt Vince, 8.59. His record, or at least his tally, looks a lot better this week by virtue of that big game that he had. Evan Kirk, 10.85. Anthony Cosmo, 10.98. And Nick Rose, 11.4. Nick's been playing well recently.
Yeah, very quietly. He's moved right up there. Nick's just saying he's an angle goalie, so you really don't see the spectacular things that you see out of guys like Matt Vince and guys like that. But he's been steady. He hasn't been the problem. You know, some of the stuff happening in front of him has been more the problem. But guys like Aaron Bold and Matt Vince, these guys are always up there with these great averages. They're just they've figured it out. Matt Vince is one of the most athletic guys I've ever seen. He could easily play a forward or a transition role in this league, and he's just a phenomenal goalie to go with it.
Absolutely.
I think one of the nice surprises so far has been Evan Kirk. He's got a 10.85 goals against average. He's faced 228. He's made 228 saves on 293 shots. He's seen almost as much rubber as Cosmo has. Granted, he's been on the wrong end of a few scores, but he's been a bit of a nice surprise.
Yeah,
I agree.
And the most important thing for a goaltender is, like the road, no matter how much rubber they've seen, they really can't get torn up. And these guys aren't getting torn up, and that's important for the team and their chances to win.
I remember Bob Watson, before he retired, gave me a good piece of advice. He said to me, if you're going to play goalie, you just have to remember they're going to score on you. The only thing you can do is move past it and look forward to the next shot.
Just allow as few as you can.
Exactly. Do what you can to stop what you can. And it looks like a lot of these guys have taken that to heart. So,
yeah, and,
you know.
And to get under double digits, and by that I mean at 8 point whatever, that's an amazing statistic to have as a goaltender.
Well, that's a sign of a lockdown defense in front of you, too, because they're not getting that many shots, which makes your job easier. But at the same time, can also make your job a little more difficult because you're not seeing as much rubber.
There you go.
You're seeing it, they're coming from all angles outside, little deflections and things like that, so you really have to be on your game.
So that brings us to saves leaders. Tyler Richards leads with 278, Anthony Cosmo with 252, Evan Kirk with 228, Dylan Ward 222, Nick Rose with 188. A lot of shots Tyler Richards, the Vancouver Stealth, has faced.
Yeah, he's faced 357 shots. That's an average of 51 shots a game.
Well, he faced over 100 on the weekend alone, so...
Yeah.
There you go.
I think that could help explain why they're 2-4.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to pull a Maple Leafs, but not being nearly as successful.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Another Leaf reference.
Or being
reference.
As successful, depending on which day you're looking at it.
Well, this is true.
It just depends on which leaf you're turning.
Anthony Cosmo's seen a fair amount of shots, too. He's seen 315 in six games. Again, that's over 50 shots. That's over 50 shots a game they're averaging.
Yeah, and he's playing great because a lot of these shots have been in close shots, and he's just seeing the ball like it's a volleyball coming at him, and he's just been everywhere. You know, he's been mobile. He looks like he's 10 years younger than he is now.
Well, no, it doesn't hurt, does it?
No, never does.
And again, Evan Kirk's seen an awful lot of rubber also.
Yeah.
And, he did a very good job when he was with Minnesota as well. So it's not that surprising that he's up there in saves leading. But, he's held Philadelphia in the games that they have won.
And that's all you can ask of a goaltender. We've said that a few times today, but it is so true.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, a lot of people look at goaltenders and they think they're supposed to be the be-all and end-all. The fact of the matter is the goalie is there if your defense screw up.
There you go. So I'll remind you folks that you're listening to Candid Frank Live on Blog Talk Radio. This is the National Lacrosse League edition. This is episode 6 for this year, 2013-14 season. We'll remind you the teams that play in the NLL. If you happen to live in the Buffalo area, the Bandits play there. You can get tickets at nll.com. If you live in Calgary, the Roughnecks play there, and the same thing. Go to NLL.com, and you can purchase tickets. The Colorado Mammoth, you can pick up tickets as well. Edmonton Rush, Minnesota Swarm, Philadelphia Wings, Rochester Nighthawks, Toronto Rock, and the Vancouver Stealth. We have a little bit of time left, guys, and for anybody that knows, we've had a winter snowstorm. So I'm getting in really good health. I'm getting in really good health because my upper body, I'm doing what they tell us not to do, which is to pick up and throw the snow with your shovel. I do it manually. I have a snow thrower in the garage. Haven't used it yet this year. Planning to. I just don't know when. It's already February, so hopefully I'm running out of chances to use it. So sometimes we have these snowstorms. It affects the program, and we don't get the same kind of reach we normally do because we're so internet necessary, if you will. Guys, an interesting week, to say the least. We've got a few minutes left. Is there something we haven't touched on? I'll start with you, Aaron. Let's repeat that public service announcement, with helping the Buffalo Bandits, help one of their own.
All right. So, Buffalo fans, those of you on the Buffalo Bandits Brigade, they have started a new program called Braver Than Brave. Sean Williams, former Toronto Rock player, former Rochester Nighthawk player, his 7-year-old son Tucker has been diagnosed with lymphoma. It's a form
non-Hodgkin's.
Of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, stage 3 Burkitt's lymphoma is what it's called, and they're currently fighting it. We are hoping to raise funds and to help out with that. You can also tweet with the hashtag Braver Than Brave. They're also putting together a website called Braver Than Brave, which should have gone live on the 31st, if I recall correctly. You can check out more information about that, and you can follow Tucker's journey. So hopefully everything will come together for Tucker, and we'll be able to see it through. In the meantime, I'm sure Sean would appreciate any messages of support, and that's pretty much it.
Any other thing you want to mention?
Yeah, actually,
feel free.
Based on the new transaction, look for a couple new faces in Toronto Rocks uniforms. While I'm sad to see Steven go, it'll be interesting to have Bill Hostrauser run the mix. And that's the other thing, yes, Toronto Rock Roadies jerseys are available for $75 a pop. You can pick them up through messaging Jarrett Harris through the Toronto Rock Roadies fan page. A portion of the proceeds will be donated to Mike Hancock and to the Halton Hills Lacrosse Association in memory of his son who passed away this summer.
How about you, Gary?
A couple of small things. If you happen to be in Philadelphia and you're listening to us, if you have power after your ice storm, just to get back to Saturday's game to see Bergie's number be raised to the roof to have that little ceremony, that'd be great to have lots of people on hand for that. If you're in Toronto, remember the first 5,000 fans get a Garrett Billings bobblehead this Friday. That's something for the collector's mantelpiece. And also in Toronto, if you don't want to go through the NLL website, come to Costco. You can pick up gold tickets for $42.99. It's going to sit you in a lower bowl. And you can even get in the Rock Roadies section if you ask for it. So come see us there.
And that's it, I guess.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
It does cover everything.
Well, you've been listening to Candid Frank Live, Blog Talk Radio. This is, of course, the National League Lacrosse edition. Edition number 6. We're on every Wednesday between 9 and 11 p.m. I'm going to get 15 minutes extra sleep tonight. I like that idea. I spent about 8 hours shoveling snow. I will remind you folks that the CFL fans who are listening in, and I know they're dying to call, but it'll have to wait till Friday. And, of course, You heard it here first on the Monday show. Henry Burris was picked up by the Ottawa Red Blacks. They had their town hall today. Mr. Myers, I hope, will give us a report on Friday on the goings-on that took place there. And obviously, the CFL, as always, is interesting. And for those of you that know the show, know that we do the CFL, and it's no coincidence we do lacrosse as well. Two great sports that are independent of any big money, but do have a dedicated fan base that I have to say is unequaled by any sport. And it's always a pleasure to work with fans such as you, Aaron, and, of course, Gary. You guys, you know, do a great job of following the game you love so much, and it's always a pleasure to listen to your insights.
Well, it's my pleasure, Frank. It's a pleasure being on your show.
Our show.
Thanks for having me, Frank.
Yep, and Aaron's my right-hand man. We're working slowly but surely, urging people. Aaron asked the question about Mr. Andy McNamara, and we could have done something pre-taped today, but unfortunately the weather didn't cooperate with us, or at least with I, being able to hook up with the network to organize doing a pre-tape. But he has assured me that he's free for next week, so we'll look forward to having Andy McNamara. We'll keep putting feelers out there for players and teams, and if you know any players that you'd like to have interviewed, send us his contact information. You can send it to candidfranklive@gmail.com. Email address, phone number, anything. We'll give them a call and see if they're willing to be on the air. But please, if you're suggesting somebody, at least get a sense for how they feel about being on the program first. That would be appreciated. And remind you again that the CFL show's on Friday. We have the coach of the year has been determined, Darian Durant of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. Led his team to the Grey Cup. They basically unloaded on Hamilton at the Grey Cup. And he did a great job of coaching a team that's supposed to win, and they did. But I could there are many a team that had a juggernaut on their hands that the coach couldn't lead to a championship. Darian Durant did that, and congratulations to him again and the Saskatchewan Rough Rider fans for having the coach of the year. I don't know how far into second, but I would assume that Ken Austin finished second, and John Huffnagel for another year. I think I don't know if it's safe to say that he was third each year, but regardless, he didn't win again this year. That may change next year when the team maybe has a chance to make their comeback. So once again, thank you for tuning in to Candid Frank Live, the National Lacrosse League edition. We hope you've enjoyed the words and insights of Gary Grube and Aaron William Freeland. My name's Frank Stanishi. Thank you for tuning in. We look forward to hearing from you next week and hope you enjoyed what you heard today. Thanks for tuning in, everyone.
The National Lacrosse League, NLL, is North America's professional indoor lacrosse league, featuring the best players in the world competing for the sport's most coveted prize, the Champions Cup. Founded in 1986, the NLL ranks third in average attendance for professional indoor sports worldwide, behind only the National Hockey League and the NBA. The 2014 NLL regular season, which marks the league's 28th year, opens on Saturday, December 28th. The league is comprised of 9 franchises across the U.S. and Canada. We have the Buffalo Bandits, the Calgary Roughnecks, the Colorado Mammoth, the Edmonton Rush, the Minnesota Swarm, the Philadelphia Wings, the Rochester Nighthawks, the Toronto Rock, and of course, the Vancouver Stealth. Live on Blog Talk Radio,
Candid Frank Live, the National Lacrosse League edition, with Aaron William Freeland, Gary Grube, sometimes Jared Harris, and Frank Stanishi. Tonight,